Hello, welcome to episode 73 of the Extra Sequential Podcast, your weekly dose of comic books, graphic novels, and manga, hosted out of Perth, Western Australia. My name is Mladen.
Wow, that was a very professional introduction. My name is Chris.
Was until you ruined it.
Hey, that's what I'm here for, buddy.
And today's show will be kind of wrapping up on the comic book events and news of the year, and maybe bringing up a few books that we didn't get a chance to talk about this year, but deserve a bit of a discussion. Also kind of just, just a look back on what sold this year and what didn't, and summarise the yearly's events. That was awkward. This is what happens when you fly by the seat of your pants, folks. Yeah, so how was your Christmas, Chris?
Very quick but tiring, with a lot of nieces and nephews involved. It's all about the adults now. Once you get kids in your life, even if they're not yours, focus becomes off you.
Did you get any comics?
No, people aren't brave enough to buy me comics. They know that I'd already have that one or whatever. So, yeah, it's just vouchers galore and Clone Wars Season 3. And I did actually buy 30 Rock Season 5 today from JB Hi-Fi.
With a voucher of some kind, I assume. I was lucky. I got three very cool comics from my fiance. She knows my taste.
As well as she should.
Yeah, Safe Area Garage there by Joe Sacco. That's his Bosnian War journalism comic. Best American Comics 2011 anthology, which is great so far. And a French artist called Winchless and his Pinocchio adaptation, which is dark and perverted and awesome. And I heartily recommend. So far, I'm like, wow. Those are all books which totally match my criteria of stuff I like, so she's a keeper.
Dark and perverted. It's good to have a fiancé who supports that side of you.
Oh, Chris, you smart ass.
So what's in this Best of Comics anthology? Is it like new, never-before-seen tales by unknown creators, or what's the deal with
that? No, it comes out every year. I think they started in 2002 or 2003 or something, and they do get the kind of the best comics of 2000 and whatever that year is, I guess. And in this case, there were excerpts, I should say, from a bunch of indie comics I hadn't seen, but also a few known ones. I think there was Daniel Clowes in there. And, it's a big, thick book, and they usually print a couple of chapters from each book, you know, that's featured within. So it's kind of cool to get a cross-section of the year's kind of most interesting or unusual comics. So, yeah, good one to pick up. Anyway, let's do this show, shall we?
Let's do this thing.
Now, Chris.
Yes, hello.
So I thought maybe we could open with kind of the mainstream US publishers.
Want to talk about us and our partnership over these last 12 months, my dear friend.
Sounds like an employee evaluation. Go on.
Yes, you've ticked some boxes, but you've also let me down in other areas.
Areas to improve. Go on. What do you have to say?
I thought it's been a big year for the Extra Sequential show.
Yeah.
Which has been, our second year? Is this our second year?
It's end of the second year of the Extra Sequential podcast, folks. Listen to all 73 episodes. Do it.
Yes. So we finally launched our Facebook page this year, which has been quite a hive of activity at times, which has been good. We've had our first giveaways.
That's true. Year. Yeah.
We hit our 50th episode, which is a big landmark.
Yeah.
And we even did a live action, not like CGI puppetry, but a live action trailer, which you can find on YouTube and on the Extra Sequential site, starring the both of us and kind of tomfooling around.
You know, I'd totally forgotten about that until you
just mentioned memories.
And it's a big year for you. I remember you had His Majesty's Monologues competition. Was that was this year, I'm sure.
Yes, it was. It was earlier in this year, I think March, April. And hoping to do it again next year. Now that I've got this free time on my hands now that I'm much like yourself and a jobless bum.
See, Chris is too modest to mention it, but he is a finalist in a WA-wide stage writing competition, monologue writing competition. But he's so humble and so that he didn't even mention it, whereas I'm not humble enough that I won't mention that I released my first physical CD this year, which I'm totally happy about.
Yes.
Let's see. Oh, I got in the 24-hour comics book. Hurrah. Haven't got
you
my copy yet.
And you're also writing for the Finder Bag, finally.
Yes, finally happened. You know, I've been trying to tee that up for ages. So stuff is happening in the world of Chris and Mladen.
And you got engaged.
And I got engaged. You know, that was this year. So it's a huge year. Did you get engaged, Chris? No.
I don't want to talk about it.
You're married to comics and sequential art.
the sight of superheroes in spandex is enough to lower me into a sense of false romance.
Okay. Let's get into some sort of keystones of 2011.
Sure.
I was looking over, kind of just broad strokes, I was looking over the New York Times paperback bestseller list of the whole year comics. And really, they were dominated by two titles this year. Do you want to try and hazard a guess?
Well, it's on my notes as well, not the whole list, but I know, and this is pretty interesting, The Walking Dead by Robert Kirkman and from Image Comics, which has been going since, I think, 2003, mm-hmm. ever since the TV series, and even when there was talk of the TV series, it's signed last year, shot up the bestsellers list. So The Walking Dead is all over the New York Times hardcover graphic novel list. It's I'm just trying to make sense of my notes here. But The Walking Dead Book 1, which collects the first 12 issues, holds number 1, while Book 2 is at number 8, and the newest volume, Book 7, is at 9th. And on the paperback list, The Walking Dead Compendium, which is a massive 48-issue collection, and it's like over 1,000 pages, that's number 1. And again, Book 1, which collects issues 1 to 6 in softcover, is in number 2 and so on. So it's been a pretty big year. So this is like the New York Times graphic novel kind of, so it's good to see that it's, you know, super amongst all the superhero stuff, which I assume there is a fair bit of.
You'd be surprised, actually. I've got some notes on that.
Walking Dead is up there, so yeah. Well done. And yeah, obviously the TV show, I guess, has a lot to do with that. That it's kind of been people's radar. So congrats to Robert Kirkman and the Image crew.
And the other title that really filled in the top 10 was Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and the Varying Volumes of Brian Lee O'Malley's comic through Oni Press. And Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which I believe is the second or the first book, I'm not sure, spent 32 weeks in the top 10 selling high-selling graphic novels. And so far, it's been one of the biggest graphic novel successes of the last 10 years, easily. Mm. And I'm sure Brian Lee O'Malley and Oni Press are high-fiving each other constantly. I found a quote from Joe Nozomak, who's a publisher for Oni Press. And he says, "I'm convinced that Scott Pilgrim will go down as one of those series that changed comics forever. When I'm out and see someone wearing a Scott Pilgrim t-shirt or sitting in a cafe reading one of his books, I get so excited about comics entering the mainstream. And to know that Oni Press's books are helping lead the way, it's an indescribable feeling." So, which is quite.
It really is a great film. We gave it a spotlight in one of our episodes, I believe. And it was such a great film. And just reading, I mean, I came into the series late, but just reading each book, you can see O'Malley just getting better as a writer and an artist, and it's so different from what I usually read. But I think if you like kind of quirky, witty kind of TV shows like 30 Rock or perhaps The Office or Community or even The IT Crowd, that kind of wackiness, I think, you do yourself a favour and certainly give Scott Pilgrim a go.
Oh, for sure. And I was looking at some of the percentages of the year, and Oni Press dominated by a strong margin. They 32% of unit sales and dollar sales was for them, followed by Image Comics, Walking Dead, as we mentioned. The DC did reasonably well. They were bumped up by Watchmen and Fables, which were big sellers this year, and followed by Scholastic, who comic book fans tend to ignore, but they do a lot of youth-oriented comics, The Adventures of Ook and Gluck, Kung Fu Caveman from the Future, and Amulet Volume 4 were huge sellers for them. Following sort of reasonably behind, in the single-digit percentages, you've got Pantheon, who published Mouse and does strongly most years.
And BB.
Yeah, that's right. And Marvel came in very low this year. So it's interesting to see that it seems like we're seeing the end of this era of their domination of DC and Marvel in print, or at least in graphic novel form, and a kind of slow movement into bookstores where most trade paperback sales occurred outside of the Diamond system. So what do you think this means in terms of long term, Chris?
Well, I guess, I mean, obviously if we talk about trade paperbacks and original graphic novels, which are usually the purview of the non-Marvel and DC publishers, so if we were to look at the same sales figures from a monthly standpoint, it would be 80% Marvel and DC, I'm sure. But, I guess the good news is that people, newbies, who are kind of driven into bookstores, which I guess there's a lot more around the comics bookshops, perhaps from TV or action figures or video games or movies, are obviously it's just a lot easier to pick up original graphic novels and trade paperbacks. And I think it's awesome that there's so much variety now. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, it's only the comic shops that superheroes are dominated. If you go into bookstores, really, you won't really... I mean, it's usually about half-half, I guess. It's
It's interesting that, because you mentioned 80%, the numbers are closer to 30% for Marvel, 30% for DC, and they sort of creep up and down on each other. So that those numbers have been shifting in terms of, and that those percentages I just quoted are from the Diamond figures, whereas the New York Times list, I think, takes into account all bookstore sales, so not just to the direct market, which is what Diamond serves to comic stores, but also I'm pretty sure the books, like the publishers going direct to the other distribution chains which handle the major bookstores, like, I don't know, Angus Robertson, Borders, or formerly Borders, I should say, et cetera, and Amazon is a big thing for them. But it's interesting to see the two major ones, they did really rely on a film and television to kind of help promote their comic, and I'm wondering if that's where things are going again. It's true that the comics do see a big bump once a film's released, so I'm guessing those deals will keep happening because half of these publishers are now owned by larger corporations, which also own film studios, such as Marvel being owned by Disney, as an example.
Well, I guess it's also easier if you're a new fan and you see, Scott Pilgrim or Walking Dead on TV, it's a lot easier to go and you know what to grab. It's quite specific. Sure. But if you see Captain America, you walk into a comic shop, where do you start? It's just a mess.
It is a little bit. And it's, let's use this as an opportunity to segue into what DC and Marvel have been doing. And we've talked enough this year about the DC Universe reboot.
Have we, Melvin?
We probably have.
We are right, and that's certainly on my notes. I remember when it was first announced in late June, July, that as of September, or specifically 31st of August, when Justice League of America number one was the first title of DC's new 52 initiative, in which they're relaunching their entire series, that's all we talked about in the news segment for a couple of weeks there, because it was like a bombshell, and it kind of cracked the internet in half for a while there. I guess there's not too much more to say than that. But I did want to mention a few other things that DC have been doing kind of before and after that. One of my favorites were the Retroactive series that you might vaguely recall, where they did a series of one-shots before September's relaunch. Mm-hmm. They had one-shots focused on 70s, 80s, and 90s. And they had the Justice League, Superman, Batman, Flash, Green Lantern, and Wonder Woman, I believe, if memory serves me correctly, and they'd get back. So you had like Norm Brayfogle and Alan Grant back on a Batman. You had the 90s creators, as much as they could do, back on these characters that they kind of steered for a pivotal time in those particular decades. And that was joy for me, and each kind of one-shot kind of picked up where it left off. So it was great to see like Justice League International with Kevin Maguire and those guys back again. And each of the one-shots also included a past story from that era. Mm-hmm. To see how kind of corny some of them were or whatever. But for someone like me who kind of grew up in 90s comics, reading those periods again, where just, where Superman and Lois Lane were married again and all that kind of stuff. It was awesome. So I'm glad. And it's been interesting, even in the wake of the new 52 DC, have been, if you're a regular reader of the previous catalogue, you'll notice that they've been pushing their collected editions of stuff they wouldn't normally collect a lot more. And so they're not forgetting fans like me who have supported their output for, decades now. So they know their roots. So that's been a big pat on the back. So even though I'm not reading much DC stuff now, it's good that they're collecting a lot of their older work as well. And they appreciate the fans in that regard.
Well, I'm glad they're doing that, yeah.
And the other thing I did want to mention in regards to DC was that this year has been a big year for artists becoming writers or co-writers. I know you probably don't notice because you're not a regular monthly reader.
No.
But people like Tony Daniel, or Tony S. Daniel as he goes now.
Tony Danza.
Yeah. Hold me close, Tony Danza. he has been writing Batman for a couple of years now, but specifically since the New 52 with he's been writing Batman. We've got J.H. Williams III kind of co-writing and writing Batwoman. You've got Francis Manapul is both writing and drawing The Flash. Dan Jurgens is back on. David Finch is writing for the first time. Ethan Van Sciver is writing DC with Firestorm again for the first time. So it's been interesting, and I think perhaps the artists, or perhaps DC editorial, realises that how much power these artists have, and a lot of artists in comics books do become writers. Frank Miller, obviously, is, I guess, the big one, and people like that. So, it's certainly been a big year for DC creators to get what they want.
It seems that way. What's been your impression of, what they've done to their brand, or if it's had any success with this whole reboot thing. I mean, I know they're presenting the image of success, that it's been a huge success. And I'll quickly summarize how there's numbers and so forth, which I won't quote, but in terms of actual palpable difference, say, for example, Justice League 1, which was their flagship title, it failed to beat Justice League 1 from 2006, or even Captain America Reborn from 2009, or even the Obama issue of Amazing Spider-Man from 2009, and like six or so other comics since 2006. No Detective Comics or any Batman book. Detective Comics finally beat the record set by issue 6 of Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee's Hush, which didn't require a company-wide reboot, or there was a lot of marketing from what I recall from that. So I guess while the numbers are still impressive over the last 2 years, and the last 2 years have seen a huge drop, overall, it doesn't seem that they've captured a new audience as much as recapturing the lapsed readers who have been missing over the last couple of years. And if the sales of the most issue threes, which have dropped substantially, is anything to go by, it seems like they're failing to hold them. Has that been your impression as well?
Oh, I hope so. And I hope they just realise their mistake and start things up again. I mean, I think this has been a big couple of years of DC. DC Comics became part of DC Entertainment. Jeff Johns and Jim Lee were kind of promoted to co-publishers with Dan Didio, and I think Diane Nelson kind of came on board from a kind of more of a mass media kind of background, so she was kind of steadying the, much like Disney had integrated with Marvel, I guess, that a lot of changes were coming down from on the top. Comics have been on the decline, but I think also digital comics have been pretty huge this year and last, and also, as we mentioned before, trade paperback collections. So people more like me are saving their coins for, not so much digital, me personally, but more trade paperback collections and whatnot, because it's usually generally cheaper. So, yeah, it's a shame, but it was certainly a brave thing to do. You know, Detective Comics and Action Comics haven't been renumbered since the 1930s. It's certainly a bit of a shame to kind of renumber them and start again, and especially when you look at kind of the Batman and the Green Lantern series. They haven't had much change to them done at all. Yeah, it'll be interesting when we have this conversation again in a year just to see how much they'll scrap it all again. And
I'm pretty sure the numbers will settle back pretty quickly, because generally the books are kind of the same. From the impression I got from launching 52 new titles simultaneously is that instead of seeming more welcoming to new readers, it's as daunting as it was before, because people are suddenly confronted with 52 new titles, which, guess what, a lot of them relate to each other again.
Yeah, and they are now. There's a lot more crossover in the kind of third, fourth, fifth issues.
Yeah,
and a bit push. So I guess it's kind of, for those fans who have stuck around since the first issue, it's kind of a good thing, because DC are trying to get them to read other issues. But a lot of those number ones weren't necessarily number ones. They kind of didn't really explain the characters and whatnot.
Well, it's not like they launched, half of them didn't even seem to launch fascinating new stories. They were just, most of them were just run-of-the-mill, a lot of them felt like fill-in issues between major arcs. I don't know if you'll agree with me, but some stood out as being, oh, this is unusual. Most were the kind of things that you see when Grant Morrison's having a break and they just get a writer-artist to fill in for an issue, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and a lot of those writer-artists are leaving, and I don't know how long Jim Lee's going to stay around on Justice League. But, Aquaman has been certainly good. Batman, Green Lantern have been pretty good. But as for everything else, I can take it or leave it, leave it generally.
It's good that you mentioned digital. That's been like a major push that's been happening this year especially.
Yes.
Most of the major publishers have finally gotten on board with same day or pretty close time frame digital distribution for their comics, either for matched price or lower. Comixology has been a big part of feeding that. DC, with their relaunch, big part of it was they were doing digital initiatives on the same date as launching these new titles. So it wasn't just stories that they were changing, also their model slightly. And the growth of the digital market hasn't been as explosive as some of them might have hoped. It's been a slow increase, and I think with the Amazon Kindle right now is black and white. It can't support the high color graphics of these comics, so that's not really a viable option for them yet. But the iPad seems to be And I'm pretty sure there's a Comixology app for that. I'd be shocked if there wasn't. Yeah. It seems to be that people are getting more into reading comics on their iPad and so forth. And that's been a development from this year and something that's absolutely going to be worth following over the next couple of years. It seems like we're on the cusp of this shift of how people are going to buy their comics. And I'm sure, you know, pamphlet form won't disappear for a while yet, but numbers will probably rebalance roughly until they find, you know, fractions that work right for each market. And the other DC thing that they did this year was they offered retailer incentives. So it meant that comics, for the first time in a long while, could be returned if the stores met a certain sales quota. The idea being they needed stores to have lots and lots and lots of copies in store. In part, it worked. I'm pretty sure most stores ended up selling out of their comics anyway. But it's interesting to see that they're exploring these retailer incentives as well as, you know, the digital and the books themselves.
Yeah, it's been a huge year for digital, as you said. Just want to get back to that briefly. Yeah, you've got companies like Dark Horse, IDW, Archie, Marvel and DC, obviously. So I think, and I guess it's kind of the same as, obviously, the music industry comparisons are pretty apt. When one of the big publishers come on board, everybody else follows. And I don't know what the readership compares to digital versus paper. I haven't dabbled much in digital, and I know you haven't much either, but I think publishers are still finding their feet and the exact, I mean, they've got Comixology, but also a few other different apps to read things on. I think Dark Horse have their own app, but also all of these publishers have their own digital storefronts, and they have, you know, like $1 sales every now and then. I know DC just had a big Batman sale for a few days where you could get a whole bunch of different issues for $1. And you can still buy collections and whatnot. For me, I haven't dived into it much because it still seems a bit messy, whereas I kind of like the feeling going into the comic shop and kind of seeing everything there, knowing what I want and whatnot. But I think, yeah, it's good that there's a cheaper option now.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously comic fans are generally pretty tech savvy, as you can tell by all the number of podcasts and websites and blogs and Twitter feeds that are all about comic books. We're a pretty savvy and vocal bunch, so I think they've kind of embraced really the digital revolution when it comes to comics. So that has certainly been a big one. So hopefully it gets a bit more streamlined and tidied and uniform for the industry as a whole next year, I'd hope.
Yeah, I think it's heading that way as more publishers kind of sort of shame each other into getting on board a little bit, and they'll settle each other's prices, because right now everyone's just throwing prices around. You start to see it in any new distribution model. Eventually all the publishers will kind of settle on a price that's kind of fair for all of them. It just happens naturally through competition. Yeah. So that'll be something to watch for. Let's keep it digital for a second. In web comics have had a kind of mini boom of the last year. And it's been interesting to see that the usually steady kind of video game-related webcomics, which used to be everywhere, have dropped somewhat.
Yeah.
Now webcomics are a little bit more experimental to their benefit, and there's lots of them, and most of them are kind of guilty of mimicking Scott Pilgrim. The tone has shifted somewhat to, as I mentioned, more experimental thing. I mean, Kate Beaton's Hark of Vagrant has exploded this year. Quirky, non-typical humor, which has nothing to do with, isn't it weird how the PlayStation 3 controller's shaped funny? You know, that kind of crap. Yeah. and there's been quite a few comics worth of note, if you don't feel like trawling through the webcomic scene, and I don't blame you. Stevan Živadinović's Hobo Lobo, which is a webcomic where he uses effects to good use by making the comic slide in dimensional planes as you scroll. So it's a bit like a live diorama. Foreground, background, things slide past each other. So it's almost like how animated backgrounds are operated. That's a really striking and unusual use of the webcomic form. Americus was first launched as a webcomic and now is a physical book, which has helped its distribution. So that's another point where webcomics have kind of worked as marketing for a physical book. Corin Chaudhry's The Abaddon unravels a mystery which happens to be comprehensible by not demanding too much of its readers every day. Thomas Scioli's American Barbarian tells a psychedelic tale which draws a lot on the work of Jack Kirby for its aesthetic. Matt Ellis's The Man of Many Shades is his dark noir story, which happens to take place in a little girl's bright and crude drawings, like on cardboard paper. And Derek Kirk-Kim and Les McLean's, they've done a wonderful character-driven comic called Tune, which takes place in an intergalactic zoo where people are the exhibits. And those have all been interesting ones from this year, I felt. And there's lots more, but
I think has an American Barbarian just been collected as well by Ad House? I think it has.
American who?
Barbarian, the Tom Scioli one.
You're probably right, yeah. And yeah. I'm sure the webcomic helped get it enough buzz that it'll at least get mainstream reviews.
This year, I don't read webcomics. Well, I don't really read webcomics at all, I must say. But yeah, I know. I think Hardcore Vagrant's had his first collection in print this year as well. And
did you say Hardcore Vagrant?
No.
Are you sure?
That's absolutely the sequel to Hobo with a Shotgun starring Rucker Hauer.
Digital's been a big deal this year. Kickstarter campaigns have been very successful this year, and there have been lots which have raised in the realm of 30 grand and so forth, over far above their expected earnings, which is what they aimed for. By far the biggest winner is Womanthology, which Renee DeLiz organized, and that raised close to $110,000 for an anthology which would feature a mix of up-and-coming and established all-female creative teams doing comics on a theme, I suppose. It hasn't come out yet, I'm pretty sure. And that one exploded enormously, but there was quite a few success stories. So, again, the internet being used
for good
instead of evil for once, or porn. to help gain money for artists, and whereas before you had to get a Zerik grant, to try and launch your comic. It's kind of nice to see these things pop up.
Let's talk about Marvel.
Let's do it.
I guess it's been a big year for them, not as much as DC, but unfortunately a lot of bad news, I guess, for Marvel. They've really been tightening their belts a lot and just kind of cancelled series left, right, and centre, particularly in the last 6 months. So we've had books like X-23, and Daken, Dark Wolverine, which are both Wolverine's children. Their ongoing series have been cancelled. Ghost Rider has been cancelled. Black Panther, Herc, which is Hercules, Iron Man 2.0, Iron Man spin-off, obviously. Alpha Flight started off as a miniseries, then announced as an ongoing, then went back to a miniseries. Victor Von Doom, you might remember the Teenage Von Doom by Becky Cloonan, I believe, and then Destroyers were both two miniseries that were scrapped before they were released, but after they were kind of solicited and announced, which was very frustrating for a lot of fans. So, they've really kind of tightened their belts. And I guess if we want to focus on events as well, DC haven't, Marvel and DC typically have big crossover events featuring all their superheroes fighting with each other and then fighting against each other. DC haven't had anything for that for a while now, but Marvel have had a couple. They've had their Fear Itself miniseries, 7-ish miniseries from Matt Fraction and Stuart Immonen. Basically featured a bunch of heroes fighting Thor's brother and some kind of serpent god, and then there's hammers that get loose and different heroes pick them up and get transformed into Asgardian fear gods or something. Red Skull's daughter was in there. It was pretty looking, but pretty much of an empty and kind of disappointing epic superhero tale for a lot of people. It didn't really affect the Marvel Universe much, except that it, unfortunately and controversially, sadly, killed Bucky, who was the former Captain America sidekick, and also one-time replacement Captain America. And he had a lot of fans because he was more than just a kind of a replacement character. But then when Captain America came back, because of the film, so they had to kill Bucky off. So it's a bit of a shame. So hopefully he comes back, and I think he might be because he's getting miniseries next year. The other one was Schism, which was the X-Men miniseries that you might be familiar with, 5-issue mini written by Jason Aaron from Wolverine and Scout, with different artists on every issue. Basically, the premise of Schism was Cyclops versus Wolverine in a kind of theological debate / fist fight. There was a junior Hellfire Club. There was like Sentinels on the loose. This was a really good, for me, for someone who hasn't read the X-Men titles literally since the 90s, Schism. And if you can pick it up and if you haven't read X-Men for a while, this is actually a great kind of, not character study necessarily, but a great kind of action and visually looking just stunning, miniseries. So, Cyclops and Wolverine have their own two different schools and two different theologies. So, and that obviously led to the relaunched Uncanny X-Men, talking about long-running series starting again. This has certainly been a year for that Uncanny X-Men, Marvel's longest-running series, I believe. Mm-hmm. So that kind of got relaunched as well. So, it's been a pretty big year for Marvel. I guess the other one I did want to mention events-wise was IDW's Infestation, which is getting a follow-up next year, and that was basically their kind of bold zombies crossover in for their different franchises. So,
well, they're different licensed franchises, which was bizarre. Yeah,
yeah, it was the first time this has been done, but IDW have a whole bunch of different licenses. So they had zombies and G.I. Joe, Ghostbusters, Star Trek, and Transformers. So they didn't really have, you know, Snake Eye teaming up with Spock or whatever.
Which is how they marketed it, to be honest. All the pictures showed all the characters like on the same cover.
They did. And that would have been cool, but I guess it would have been a nightmare for licensing. I never read the first couple of issues, but yeah, I know there was a zombie Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in there at some point, so that was pretty cool. IDW, I mean, yeah, Doctor Who, I guess, is their other big, and I think they had Angel as well for a while, but spin-off, so it's been a big year for them as well.
The problem with these events that you're bringing up through Marvel, I've always, and DC, I guess, I've always felt that they have no consequences half the time, or no lasting consequences.
Consequences. Usually it's just somebody's death and then they come back, you know, a couple of years later. Yeah.
They always market it as, you know, things will never be the same, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, a schism in this case. What usually happens is the writers run out of steam once they've exhausted the original idea, and the next creative team kind of just gets things back to the status quo, sometimes just within one page. You know, what was that Punisher story where for the longest while he became like an agent for Heaven? He was working as an angel or something.
Really?
Yeah.
In the 90s, obviously.
I'm pretty sure. And then basically once the next writer took over in one panel, he had him go, I'm over that. And then he just gets back to doing the same thing. So there's always this feeling like things never change. So I guess that's there's a thing which is a kind of event – being tired of events or being weary of them, and I understand it from that point of view. Do you relate to that?
Yeah, I mean, when I was when they're done right, they're done awesome. And I think DC in the 90s, when I was first getting into comics, they did it awesomely, and I think we can both agree on that. And when you look at Batman, not only Death of Superman, I mean, Superman wasn't even present in all of his titles are the best part of a year after Death of Superman and Return of Superman. And then he had Batman with Nightfall, which I think is the longest running. I think it's in the Guinness Book of Records for the longest running crossover. It had like 72 individual issues or something ridiculous over the better part of 2 years.
Yeah, it was
nice. Then you had like No Man's Land, the earthquake in Gotham, and a Bruce Wayne murderer, a Bruce Wayne fugitive. But they haven't done that for a while. But I really love those. But obviously, that the 90s was the best time for comics because everyone was new and the sales were so astronomically high. But, yeah, they haven't done that for a while, so usually they just stick them to individual miniseries now rather than affecting a whole line-wide of books. But, it's kind of event fatigue.
Do you have anything else on the realm of the mainstream publishers?
I do. One last one is we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the death of Spider-Man. What did you say? They killed Spider-Man? Hey.
Did anyone notice?
They didn't kill Peter Parker. They killed the Ultimate Universe, a version of Spider-Man. More of a teen version of Spider-Man, which has been around for, in the Ultimate Universe for about 10 years. So, he died. And Miles Morales, which got a huge lot of mainstream coverage, and we have certainly talked about in the show when it first happened, he's a half-Hispanic, half-black character that debuted in August's Ultimate Fallout number 4, which was a miniseries obviously focused on the death of Spider-Man. Then his own series debuted in September. He's created by a long-standing Ultimate Spider-Man writer, Brian Michael Bendis, with artist Sarah Pacelli. And, it's actually a pretty good series, and it's one of the very few Marvel series that are actually picking up every issue of it. So it's a fun, vibrant new series and a new character. We don't know much about his origin, where he's coming from, his background yet, but his Bendis has just done a wonderful job of kind of introducing this character. And I think, it's been kind of like what DC tried to do with their new lesbian, redheaded Batwoman character with the mainstream press that didn't really lead anywhere.
Yeah, but they made a good book in the end.
They didn't have an ongoing Batwoman series, but this has actually been a worthy recipient of the spotlight. So, the regular Peter Parker Spider-Man is still around, and it's been a fairly big year with him, with Spider-Island and whatnot, with pretty much all the Manhattan citizens getting spider powers, but I don't read those titles. But, new Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales, half black, half Hispanic, so that's certainly a big one for Marvel, and well done for doing that.
It's interesting that you mentioned Batwoman there, and that's been a kind of a critical success for DC this year and towards the end of last, I believe, is when it started in, well, getting a lot of attention. But they really kind of blew their load way too early with the marketing on that title in the mainstream press. I remember the lesbian Batwoman thing. They were talking about that back in 2006, very early, and they did nothing with it. She popped up in the 52, like...
Correct.
Yeah, and then disappeared for a while until finally J.H. Williams and the creative teams there. Who was the writer on that? Was that initially, I mean?
So Greg Rucka, maybe?
Greg Rucka? Yeah, one of them. I'm pretty sure someone who had worked on GCPD, you know, the Gotham City Police Department comic.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it was also bad timing, I do recall, because that was around the same time that Bruce Wayne died in
Yeah.
And so, like, so kind of DC, really, they should have saved their mainstream, because, you know, the mainstream very rarely gets press to DC or Marvel. But Marvel has certainly done pretty well. Death of Captain America, Death of Human Torch, they break the news in the mainstream first before going to comic sites, which some fans feel is a bit of a slap in the face. But I do remember when DC killed Batman. Don't worry, folks, he's got better. Just travel back in time or something. But yeah, they kind of said, oh, hey, well, we just killed Bruce Wayne. And they're like, well, you know, we gave all this coverage to Batwoman. So they didn't use it to their synergy or whatever media savvy word you can use.
With the Batman going forwards in time thing, he had to get back to the future, if I recall. Did they do the lame thing where Bruce Wayne ends up inventing gunpowder or, you know, that kind of crap, like where Forrest Gump invents the smiley face?
I saved Lincoln's life. That was when, for me, what was that series called? The Return of Bruce Wayne?
But, you know, that was 2010 or something, so we should probably...
Yeah, it kind of fell apart for me from then, and I wasn't really that keen on Batman. Grant Morrison kind of went off his rails and a bit wacky then.
But I'd like to talk more about Miles Morales in another episode. We'll be looking at race in superhero comics, and I look forward to dissecting that later.
Your manga or indie?
Yeah, in terms of manga, it's been an interesting year. Japan has had, and Korea have had, the same problems with GFC, where comic sales have been dropping kind of generally across the board. So they've been tightening their belts there. But in the West, what we've seen instead is that the manga boom that we've had over the last 10 years is showing signs of slowing down. Now, that's not to say titles like Naruto and One Piece still aren't going gangbusters, and they are. They're still, a lot of cases, outselling most American comics, even the major ones. Sure. But there's sort of been few big titles this year, fewer than there have been in other years, and there's been little interest in new titles that that have been published, which kind of means that a lot of the publishers are now exploring the less shonen-type titles and more... the works of the likes of Yoshihiro Tatsumi and others, who are kind of your offbeat manga and a different kind of audience. So it's no longer they've milked the cash cow, but now they're kind of realize they have these connections still over East, and they're bringing these unusual books over. So in the last year, we're seeing a bit of a trickle of unusual books coming over. Saturn Apartments, you read, which that isn't kind of a normal manga in many respects. We mentioned Drops of God, the Axe Manga Anthology last week, and so forth. So that should be... I'm sure sales will continue to decline, and kids are getting less and less interested in manga. But for now, it's doing all right. And the same in France. I know manga's a big seller again in Europe. But French numbers in 2011, I'll mention the long-awaited volume 20 of the comic book 13 by Yves Saint-Thé and
Yorgos Gigantov. Yes.
That's right. Kind of about the... It starts off a bit like Jason Bourne, an assassin who gets amnesia, and then there's the mystery of who he is, but it goes in a different direction. But the latest volume of that had an initial print run of half a mil and was the biggest seller of the year. Thorgal 33 was also a big seller. Kid Paddle and Boule Bill, and... as I mentioned, Naruto and One Piece both had really strong numbers in France. And Walking Dead was also the Walking. I've never said Walking Dead before. That's unusual. It was a big success in France as well as elsewhere.
Okay.
So I should also mention that 2011 saw more than 455 comic festivals, conventions, or exhibitions in France, which is more than any year before. And I've always wanted to go to the festival Bande Dessinée d'Angoulême, which basically means International Festival of Comics at Angoulême. But
let's do a show there one year.
I would love to. See, that's an aside, but it's I've never kind of been there, and that's one convention that I always see. I'm like, oh, I need to go there. And on their website, I'll just mention, I thought this was crazy. They sell T-shirts, as most places do, but you can select the size and position of the print on the fabric.
Okay.
Like you can control, like, you know, when you're tagging photos on Facebook, just controlling the borders and shrinking it. So you go, no, I just want a little logo here. You can do that. I've never seen that before. Fascinated me, Chris.
You should go there for your honeymoon.
Oh, yeah, you know, maybe I will. I won't understand a thing that's going on, and I'll sit there watching speeches from, you know, they have speeches from Art Spiegelman and so forth. So unless if he speaks French, which he may, you know.
Well, maybe it will be exotic, like a Frenchman would be in Australia.
You know, I do have a French friend who's told me he finds Australian girls trying to talk French with Australian accents is very sexy. So it works both ways, people. Besides broad strokes, I thought maybe we could just mention a couple of books we've read this year that were interesting but don't deserve too much praise, or I just thought were interesting to talk on, more just kind of interesting discussion pieces. One that I keep seeing pop up is Joe the Barbarian, and this has been a title from Vertigo Comics written by Grant Morrison of Writing Everything fame, and Sean Murphy, who's worked on Hellblazer and a bunch of great titles for Vertigo mostly. It's about a boy who goes into hypoglycemic shock, and his house sort of becomes his fantasy story, like as he descends down the stairs and so forth. Except it's not whimsical, it's like clearly deluded. It's a five issue minis. But Chris, you've read this one, I'm pretty sure, vaguely remember it.
Yes, great art by Sean Murphy.
Yes.
And, you can almost see it. It's almost like a darker Disney film or something. You can almost see it as something like that. And it's got great art where he's kind of got, like, homages to his kind of toys. You've got, like, like we mentioned before, you can see He-Man, a Snake Eyes, and Optimus Prime kind of in his toys littered around. And it's, I can't recall if, is it an all ages comic? Not necessarily.
No. But not really. It's a Vertigo comic, so it's assumed that the age group might be a little bit teen and older, I suppose, just because it's come out through them. And it's similar territory to any number of Vertigo books, like what's the, Unwritten. It reminds me a bit of that. But I found it very similar to The Stuff of Legend, which you and I both have liked in the recent past. And the book's gotten a bit of attention. It made quite a few people's kind of best of or honorary mentions lists, and especially because there's a great splash panel where he first wakes up in the world and they somehow got all the licensing rights to show Optimus Prime and Batman and all the other characters surrounding him, like all his toys and life size, and Captain Picard hands him a phaser and wearing slightly different clothes, but it's clear who they are. But that's sort of got a lot of people's attention because it's like, oh, isn't that amazing, crazy. I had a different takeaway from this book, and tell me if I'm crazy, but I found it kind of a little bit, not troubling, but a little bit disappointing in that on the surface, yes, it's this piece of fantasy and it's meant to be, oh, look at the triumph of imagination. But to me, it's this failure of imagination because everything he imagined is something else that's happened in pop culture. Even the quest that he goes on, in the book, they refer to it as the usual. So, like, save the princess, save the kingdom, the usual. I feel like seeing this teenage character who can't have an original imaginary thought, it's all stuff that he's seen elsewhere, kind of the problems of being saturated in pop culture to a degree where it saps your creativity. And I don't think it's intentional in the story. I don't think Grant Morrison was aware that he was doing this. Are you getting at all where I'm coming from here?
And not at all. You're just speaking gibberish.
Really?
You're reading into it too much.
You think?
Relax, man. Just enjoy the ride.
Well, that's what I meant. The ride was so typical and the stuff that happened was so standard that I was like, this is the best a teenage boy could come up with. Like other stories where people journey to a magical world, at least crazy, unexpected things happen. This was like dream fantasy by numbers, which was the most disappointing part of the book. And it's not to say that it's not beautifully drawn and so forth, but for a book which sort of aims to do one thing, which is probably to impress you with the imagination of this boy or, you know, feel like, oh, wow, what a great adventure or whatever, it kind of does the complete opposite in there, like, oh, this kid has no imagination. So, maybe you need to read it again and we could have this conversation in more depth because, any books from this year you wanted to chat about?
I think I read a lot of them in the last couple of issues with the, our Christmas, our best of, and also sure. our kind of unread stack that we kind of got to. Mm. But one of the ones I do remember this year, but I haven't picked up recently, actually, I must say, was the new Punisher series, written by Greg Rucka with art by Marco Cicetto. And it's pretty gritty, and I haven't been a big Punisher fan. And again, I'm a bit behind on this series. I know Punisher Max just got cancelled. I think their last issue is coming out in February, but it's another series written by Jason Aaron. But I know that's being ended as Aaron wanted it to be. But yeah, I know this kind of made an impression for the first, I think, like two or three issues. Punisher didn't even speak. There's like a killing at a, memory serves me correctly, a cop's wedding, which a whole bunch of people got killed, and then kind of Punisher comes along, and just the artwork by Cicetto or whoever you say it is pretty gritty and pretty hardcore. I'm not really selling it, but yeah, it's basically just called The Punisher number one. That came out a couple of months ago. Hmm. And yeah, I really liked that. But yeah, as to say, I mean, Schism impressed me, the retroactive stuff impressed me. But this has kind of been a year for me where I've been kind of scaling back my operations.
Interesting that.
So I haven't been following monthly titles as much. Black Panther, I will say, Black Panther has impressed me. Written by David Liss, mm-hmm. and illustrated by Franco Francavella, I think, and a few fill-in artists here and there. Again, another series that I just picked up on a whim, but he basically took over after Daredevil went a bit nutso. Daredevil, I think, is came back this year by Mark Waid, which has had a lot of praise, again, which I haven't read. But yeah, the Black Panther series has been pretty good. Generally, a lot of DC stuff has been disappointing me, so it's usually just been kind of the more independent stuff, the more, you know, top shelf and only OGN's Image stuff. I'm sure there's been heaps of Image, who was Jake Ellis and...
We've given ones. Image a lot of kudos in the last episode as well. With good reason, they've done great work. It's interesting to see that even you've scaled back your mainstream purchases, DC and Marvel... And not necessarily that you're getting more indie books, but you, compared to previous years, you seem kind of on like you've not you've
well,
not
the read series less I've been, more. Like Secret Six, for example, is a long-running series that I pretty much got every issue of, and the last issue of that came out, I think number 36, written by Gail Simone, came out just before the relaunch. But yeah, a lot of the series. I mean, I've been giving Dark Horses books a lot of a try, particularly their horror books, like the Hellboy stuff, and it's going to be a huge year for Hellboy next year. But Orchid, The Strain, which I talked about, I think, last week. Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, usually I think we've done an episode before on kind of buying habits, but especially with the Marvel and DC stuff, for a longest time I was just kind of buying it out of, I guess, just regularity and routine, even if I didn't. It's more about following the characters, but now I follow the writers and artists, and also I realised that there's so much good talent out there, and superheroes just don't do it for me generally a lot of the time. And it's interesting, even in my film and TV watching, I mix it up, and I watch, you know, probably a foreign film at least a week, a small art house independent film, not just to see if there's a nipple slip or anything or a sex scene in there, but generally because that's where all the good ideas are, you know. And I'm sick of kind of Michael Bay butt shots and shiny robots and just kind of empty. So, I mean, why should I guess comics are now reflecting my diverse interest in the other arts?
You know, yeah, I agree with you, and it's cool to see. I don't want to say it in a strange way, but I do think we should be able to hold up entertainment to a higher standard than what we're currently getting.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I always cringe when someone says, well, it's just a movie or it's just a comic book or whatever. Why can't you just have fun? If it fails to be fun, then why the hell should I, like, what possible defense do you have for it then? Once it even fails to do that one thing it's supposed to be doing, you can't just say, well, you shouldn't take it so seriously. If it costs me money, I'm going to take it seriously. Damn you. I'm intrigued to see where the Extra Sequential podcast will go in the next year if your reading habits change. But one book I read this year, and I thought I'd just quickly mention because I didn't give it an award, I mentioned it to you, and I don't think you'd heard of it. It's called Paying for It by Chester Brown.
No.
Okay. pretty sure it came out through Drawn and Quarterly. And it's a non-fiction account of Chester Brown's, all his interactions with prostitutes between 1999 to today, hence paying for it. And the way it's structured in, like, chronological order, and it goes through all the kind of conversations and encounters he has with them and his friends on the topic. One of his best friends happens to be Seth, you know, cartoonist Seth.
Right, yeah.
And it's one of those books which it's incredibly honest, and it brings up a topic which is rarely covered in comics, and it does so in a memorable way. And I personally have no real issue with prostitution, you know, as long as the women are safe and not taking advantage of. So for me, it was like a curious, interesting thing, like, huh, so that's how you do it, huh? It can be a little bit sad at times, I guess, but I don't want to pass judgment on anyone. It's just a fascinating look into a slightly different lifestyle, and the kind of reasons he gives for it are fascinating. And he makes some effort to present his argument fully. So it's like no half measures. Like, this is my stance on it. This is why I think it's okay. This is why I think it should be entitled to it, and so forth. It's like he's starting this conversation with this book. Yeah, at first it really annoyed me because I'm like, oh, some smart-ass autobiographical comic. But his approach is so straightforward, and he even gives his friends space to comment in the appendices of the book if they don't agree with his depiction of them or what they said in the situation, which is a fascinating choice. And he never shows the faces of the prostitutes, which is slightly bizarre because they're drawn in simple caricature.
Yes.
So, in one sense, it's like a classy move in that he's trying to be accurate to reality but not revealing names, places, locations, whatever. But it does kind of dehumanize the girls, so they start to seem like a bunch of nameless dolls. It's strange, but it's not a perfect book. But as an autobiography, it's incredibly kind of vivid and simply drawn, crudely drawn. The art won't appeal to everyone, but it's one to check out if you're at all curious about autobiographical comics, which aren't just about typical 20-something cartoonist who lives a normal life in Seattle. You know those ones that are just boring as? Oh, and the way he draws himself is terrifying. He looks like a skull. He draws himself kind of like, I was going to say Red Skeleton, but that's not his name.
Red Skull.
From Captain America. Yeah, he looks like this horrifying individual and he has his glasses, so you never see his eyes. It's just a fascinating choice to paint yourself in this incredibly unflattering way. But yeah, that's one I'd recommend to you, Chris, just so we could have this conversation, because I think even if you don't agree with it, like, and the point he takes, I'd like to have that conversation.
You'd like to talk prostitutes with me? Sure.
Well, you know, get trade tips. Secrets. And in another episode, I thought we could cover Habibi once we've both had a chance to digest it. We'll do that in the new year, I think.
Just want to briefly talk about movies. It's been a big year for movies. Tintin, Thor, Green Lantern, X-Men First Class, Batman Year One, the animated film, Captain America, Cowboys and Aliens, Conan. Next year, we've got The Amazing Spider-Man, Avengers, Dark Knight Rises, Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, sequel to the 2007 film, and Superman Man of Steel is not until 2013. Mm-hmm. Video game-wise, DC Universe Online finally launched, which is now free. Arkham City, the huge Batman success, which is sequel to the 2009, and there's a whole lot of downloadable content for that now. Marvel vs. Capcom 3, The Darkness 2, Spider-Man Edge of Time. The next year, you've got Marvel's Superhero Squad Online, based on the all-ages cartoon. Gotham City Imposters, which looks pretty bad. X-Men Destiny, which is written by the writer of the X-Men Legacy comic, Mike Carey. And you've also got a Walking Dead game, apparently, which is from Telltale. And it's going to be the first game to use a PlayStation Move and Wiki. Mm-hmm. And as I did mention before, Dark Horse is certainly going to be a publisher to watch. I think next year is going to be a huge one for them. Hellboy and BPRD, Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. You've got a whole bunch of Star Wars miniseries from Dark Horse. You've got Wood and Cloonan on Conan, which surprised everybody. And I believe also, I'm surprised you didn't mention this, Maladdin, the 72nd and final issue of DMZ is out this week.
This week, is it? Oh,
this week, Maladdin.
I'm a trade waiter, so I don't even pay attention.
Fair enough. And Marvel are launching their Season 1 series of graphic novels, which are going to be newbie-friendly, much like the Earth 1 Superman, and we're still waiting for the Batman 1 that DC have done. So you've got newbie-friendly OGNs centered on Fantastic Four, X-Men, Daredevil, Spider-Man, and just announced a Hulk, Ant-Man, and Doctor Strange. So I guess perhaps inspired by DC's huge success with Superman Earth 1, Marvel Season 1 series of OGNs will be launching next year. focused on kind of recaps of those. So hopefully they work and get new people into the comic shop as well. But yeah, it's been another huge year, a bit of a shake up in the industry, I think. Sales, digital, film adaptations, everything else.
Sure.
And I'm hanging out for 2012.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what happens and whether you buy yourself a
iPad
or something. Yeah, whether we both succumb and start going all digital. You never know. You never know, Chris.
It is quite possible.
Over the next couple of weeks, we'll be doing a feature review of Habibi. We'll be doing a feature review of the new Tintin movie at some point, I feel, possibly. We'll be doing a topic that I'm sure Chris is probably like groaning internally to do, but I wanted to talk about race and racism in superhero comics, because you superhero comic fans are big racists. How do you like that?
You would say that as a Macedonian, Serbian, Croatian, whatever you are. I don't know. It's all the same.
Whatever you are. Oh, so I'm just nothing.
I'm just preparing ourselves. Thanks for listening, everybody, to another 12 months of extra sequential goodness for your audio canals. Hit us up on Facebook. We've had a bit of a spike on new friends that have joined, so thank you very much. Continue to join Facebook and feel free to make comments. We have thick skin, so if you want a virtual slap us or throw a cow or a sheep at us or whatever people do on Facebook, I don't know. Listen to us on iTunes and shoot us an email at chris@extrasequential.com, and my blog is comicbookjesus.com, and I write for brokenfortr.com when I have the time and can't be bothered. Well, Adam?
You can catch my music writing at thefindmag.com and my own music at purgeaudit.com, which is the music for the show. I would like to hear anyone's opinions on Joe the Barbarian and whether you think I'm coming completely from right field with my criticism / bizarre reading of it. I want to know whether you had a similar feeling or whether you think I'm full of it. So hit us up on the Facebook with that. You can comment under this show, whatever. Yep.
Any psychoanalysts, please give us your professional opinion.
Please do. Obviously, email us with feedback. We like your feedback, positive and negative. We haven't got too much negative feedback yet. What's up with you people?
Well, they like to hear us be negative towards one another.
Yeah. Shut up, Chris. Hey.
Next show, whenever that will be, you'll be in a different state. And I don't mean the state of inebriation.
Very good, because it is New Year's coming up soon. What are you doing for New Year's, Chris?
I'm actually going to a party, and this will be the first time that I've stayed up New Year's, probably since I was about 12. I just think, what's the point of staying up? It's still going to be the New Year when I wake up. It's just another day. I'm not into formalities.
Humbug.
What are you doing? You're doing something, obviously?
Not really, no. I was hoping you'd say nothing, too. No, you're way cooler than me. No, I'm probably doing some lame thing with my friends. We're doing a death pool for this year.
What?
Where you bet on which 10 or 20 or so celebrities will die in the coming year. Winning it all. And so, you get more points the younger they are. So it's very morbid.
Don't make it any local celebrities, because then you might,
Yeah, well, we don't want to influence the odds by actually accidentally killing someone with our car.
Hey, local newsreader, how you going? I'm a big fan. What bus? What do you mean? Push? Yeah, you don't want to do that.
There's probably a daddo no one will miss. Hey.
Right behind the couch.
Take care. And yeah, as Chris mentioned, we'll be doing next show semi-long distance. I'll be in Melbourne. Maybe we'll find something suitable to discuss in that sense. Anyway, thanks everyone for another year, and bye.
2012 be awesome. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.